content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Eye of the Storm. Tom Dundon's calculating nature made him a billionaire and helped transform the Carolina Hurricanes into one of the NHL's premier franchises. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Hurricane Force. Tom Dundon's calculating nature made him a billionaire and helped transform the Hurricanes into one of the NHL's premier franchises. And this is written by Alex Silverman of the Sports Business Journal. Tom Dundon stands alone on the top level of a luxury box on opening night of the Carolina Hurricanes 2023-24 season. The team's owner leans forward on the counter in front of him, his blue eyes focused intensely on the ice at PNC Arena. Before entering the box that night, a visiting reporter is told by a team staffer, "You might not want to talk to him too much while the game is going on." Tom Dundon, you see, loves owning the Carolina Hurricanes, but there's a reason he doesn't love going to games, the chance you might lose. When he's at his 13,000-square-foot home outside Dallas, it's less of a problem. Dundon can simply turn off the game and be surrounded by his family. But in Raleigh, where he does not own a home, it's different. It's tough to lose and then go back to the hotel, he said. Fortunately for Dundon, the Hurricanes don't lose on this night, beating the Ottawa Senators before a sellout crowd of 18,893. For nearly 3 hours, Dundon keeps his attention on the game. During stoppages, he exchanges quick notes with former Hurricane star and golf buddy Justin Williams, seated nearby, about subjects as specific as the face-off strategy employed by Hurricanes coach Rod Brindamore. That night marks the start of another successful regular season, one that ultimately nets the Hurricanes' third straight campaign with at least 100 points, a first in the franchise's 45-year history. Carolina is in the playoffs for the sixth straight time, more than all the previous playoff appearances the franchise had made since relocating from Hartford in 1997. With two trips to the Eastern Conference Finals since 2019, but no Stanley Cup title since 2006, the Hurricanes are facing a cup-or-bust postseason. That has become the norm since Dundon bought the team at a valuation of $420 million 6 years ago. The club's recent success includes averaging a franchise record 19,526 fans per game in 2022-23, a figure boosted by a sellout crowd of 56,961 for an NHL Stadium Series outdoor game across the parking lot at NC State's Carter-Finley Stadium. This season, they averaged 18,798 per game, 100.6% of capacity at PNC Arena. And after long being the subject of relocation rumors, the team has a more secure future in Raleigh than ever. Last August, Dundon reached a deal to extend the team's lease through the 2043-44 season and to redevelop the land around PNC Arena into a transformative mixed-use development. By most estimates, the value of the Hurricanes has more than doubled since Dundon bought majority control of the team from longtime owner Peter Karmanos Jr. He became the team's sole owner in 2021 after buying Karmanos' remaining shares. Dundon's ownership of the Hurricanes is only part of what has become a substantial sports portfolio. In addition to being a key investor behind the rise of Top Golf prior to buying the Hurricanes, Dundon has become the most influential behind-the-scenes figure in the fast-growing sport of pickleball. He also briefly took over the Alliance of American Football, a spring football league he shuttered before the end of its first season in 2019. And now his deep pockets and swift success with the Hurricanes has made Dundon a top choice to be a potential lead investor for a group aiming to bring a Major League Baseball team to the state. "We talked about potential candidates, but specifically one, Tom," said Tipping Point Sports CEO Mitchell Zietz, a consultant for the group led by former North Carolina State Budget Director Charlie Parruse and Governor Roy Cooper. "He was clearly the top choice." Dundon, 52, went public with his intention to bring an expansion franchise to North Carolina in October, and while he's officially open to other locales across the state, he's made it clear that he'd prefer to put the team in Raleigh. Whenever MLB does decide to expand, perhaps by the end of the decade, Raleigh will be up against trendier markets, including nearby Nashville, Tennessee, but will benefit from having a billionaire with a burning desire to win at everything he does. The biggest thing about Tom is he's super competitive, said Hurricanes Chief Marketing Officer Mike Foreman. So if all of a sudden it's either us or another city that's going to get an MLB team, he's going to do whatever it takes to win. On the move. A few hours before the season opener, Dundon is sitting in his office at PNC Arena. His name is on the door, but clearly he doesn't spend much time there. The few decorative items, a couple of random framed action shots of Hurricane players on one wall and an oversized team bobblehead flanking an empty desk, look as if they'd been plucked from arena storage to jazz up the otherwise sterile space, and a ringing landline phone catches him by surprise. I didn't even know I had a phone, he says, irked by the presence of what he considers an anachronism in a modern workplace. I've got to ask why we put phones in. Dundon's longtime friend Mark Multhan made the trip to Raleigh for opening night and is flying back to Dallas with him after the game. Multhan is astonished when Dundon sits and answers questions for more than an hour. He's hard to get to know. He doesn't have a lot of good friends, Multhan said. I'm surprised he sat there for that long. I was shocked. That description jibes with Dundon's reputation as one of the more enigmatic and eccentric figures in sports business. Several people contacted for this profile declined to talk about their business dealings with him. He usually avoids any press that puts him at the center of the story. Multhan chalked up his willingness to talk to SBJ to a desire to promote his MLB ambitions. Asked whether Dundon is close with his fellow NHL owners, Commissioner Gary Bettman said that he likes to focus his energies and intentions and efforts on the Hurricanes, and frankly, if you're a fan of the Hurricanes, that's good news. Florida Panthers owner Vinny Viola, who considers Dundon a friend, said he and Dundon have bonded over their mutual penchant for using statistics to drive their business decisions. He's actually kind of shy, Viola said. I don't think people see him that way, but I do. He's a family, stay-at-home guy. Dundon, who has five children ranging in age from 7 to 22 with his wife of 23 years, Varushka, spent more time in Raleigh than usual last summer to nail down the terms of the lease extension and redevelopment agreements. He visits a couple of times a month during the season for a day or two at a time, not quite as often as he did when he first bought the team and needed to fix things up. I stay in a hotel. It's easier, he says of his visits to the Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary, later adding that he'll likely establish a residence in the new development around the arena once it's complete. Though he isn't a constant physical presence in Raleigh, he's far from an absentee owner. Tom is very in tune with what's going on with his team, said Dallas Stars president Brad Alberts, who corresponds with Dundon regularly about both business and hockey. The economics, salaries that are paid to players, the culture around his group, there's no question about it. In fact, Dundon is known as being among the most hands-on bosses in the league. He bristles at this characterization. I don't even live here, he says, but those he's closest to in the organization aren't afraid to say so. You name it, he's involved in all of it, said Bryn D'Amore. I don't think you have another owner in the sports that's as involved in his team as he is. Bettman also characterized Dundon as very hands-on, noting that his office often hears from the Hurricanes owner multiple times a week. Our hockey operations people, our officiating people, will hear from him if there's a call he's concerned about. After the fact, of course, not during the game, Bettman said. He's always raising good questions about the collective bargaining agreement and the salary cap, and he's always trying to make sure that the Hurricanes are doing everything possible within the rules to get an edge. Modest upbringing. Dundon learned at an early age that he liked money, and he was willing to hustle to get it. I always wanted to have money if I didn't have it, Dundon recalled. It's always been enjoyable to me to figure out how to make money. Dundon did not grow up wealthy. In fact, he says, I didn't know what Wall Street was. I didn't know anything more than being an electrician or whatever. I thought I would have been much more blue-collar. That's how I thought about the world. Dundon spent his early childhood in Atco, New Jersey, a small town 25 miles southeast of Philadelphia, as the youngest of two sons to a mother who worked as a secretary and a father who managed a few pizzerias. His family moved to Houston for 2 years before settling in Dallas when Dundon was 15. After graduating from Plano Senior High School, Dundon attended Southern Methodist University, where he kept a pair of needle-nose pliers handy to adjust the busted radio dial in his pickup truck. After graduating with a degree in economics in 1993, Dundon's first professional venture, a burger restaurant called Izzy's, was a flop and shut down within a year. I was literally poor, Dundon recalled. I lived in my mom's one-bedroom apartment and had like 100 grand in debt. A few of Dundon's college buddies were working at the Frank Para Autoplex, a large Chevrolet dealership in Irving, and suggested he come join them. He got a job in the finance office and learned about the business of auto loans. It clicked with Dundon's analytical, detail-oriented disposition. Soon, he and a few associates decided to start their own business that would work with dealerships to offer loans to buyers with bad credit. It was the early days of subprime auto lending, and that company, Drive Financial Services, soon found an edge against larger financial institutions. We were competing with Capital One and Ford and General Motors and Chase, companies that seem much smarter, Dundon said. But we were able to gain an advantage with a little more entrepreneurial way to go about it, and then once you get larger, if you keep some of that efficiency and spirit, then it's easy to beat the big companies. In 2006, Banco Santander bought 90% of the company for about $650 million. Instead of cashing out, Dundon kept his 10% share and became CEO of Santander Consumer USA. That company was spun off and went public in 2014 at a valuation of more than $8 billion. Dundon stepped away from the company a year later and in 2017 reached a settlement agreement that netted him $713 million. By this point, Dundon had already dipped his toe into the sports industry with an investment in Topgolf, which he says he chose primarily to get his kids as excited about playing golf as he is. He currently owns 10% of the business, which helped elevate into the entertainment behemoth with more than 80 posts nationwide. A few years after Santander, however, Dundon sought a new passion project. I was either going to buy a company to fix, I like to try to figure out what's broken, or buy a sports team, he said. The Hurricanes fit both criteria. When he received a call from a banker about purchasing the team in 2017, Dundon didn't even know where they were located. I thought they were in Charlotte, he said. That's not to say Dundon was a stranger to hockey. He inherited his father's New York Rangers fandom as a child, and decades later was a Dallas Stars season ticket holder. But when the Hurricanes came to Dallas, it was a game I wouldn't go to, Dundon said. The Hurricanes weren't that popular in their own city either. The club averaged a league-worst 11,776 fans during the 2016-2017 season, en route to an eighth straight season without qualifying for the playoffs. Their unexpected Stanley Cup title in 2005-2006 was becoming a distant memory. Hurricanes president and general manager Don Waddell remembers welcoming Dundon for his first visit to PNC Arena as a prospective buyer. We had like 3,000 people. It was preseason, Waddell recalled. And he says, this looks like a disaster. I said, well, it's not great, but it's better than this. But by that point, Dundon had already explored purchasing a few other teams, including the Carolina Panthers, Houston Rockets, and Brooklyn Nets, each of which ultimately sold for north of $2 billion, as well as a professional soccer team he can't recall offhand. He was ready to make a deal. I didn't see it as a good investment, Dundon said. It's worked out very well, but when I did it, I was trying to figure out how much I was willing to lose to do something that I really enjoyed. I was lucky enough to be in a position where that number was greater than zero. A different look. Dundon's attire is typically the same every day, a sweatshirt, track pants combination, often all black, with a matching Hurricanes baseball cap. Doesn't matter if he's going to a league meeting or a hockey game, Waddell said. Everybody's in suits and stuff. He's in a sweatsuit. He couldn't care less, and that's what I like about him. He may not dress like a sharp-elbowed businessman, but Dundon has nevertheless earned a reputation for taking a hardball approach to his running of the organization. Some people around the league feel that way, but he wants to be fair, Waddell said. He always wants to be on the good side of the fair deal. But he's told me multiple times when I was making deals, I just want a fair deal. Dundon's guiding principle, Waddell said, is that a player's price tag is worth the value that they bring. Hurricanes assistant general manager Eric Tulski, regarded around the league as one of the foremost analytics experts, said Dundon wants every piece of information he can get to make that type of determination. It really comes down to strict discipline within the numbers, said Viola, the Florida Panthers owner. He's one of the most disciplined owners that I've observed in the league. Off the ice, Dundon's cold calculations have led to the departure of two fan-favorite broadcasters who had been with the organization since its Hartford Whalers era. After the 2018 season, Dundon reportedly asked longtime radio announcer Chuck Calton to take an 80% pay cut to stay with the organization following the expiration of his contract. When he declined, Dundon decided to simply simulcast the audio of the team's television broadcast on the radio, something several other NHL teams have also adopted. "I want to put all the money on the ice," Dundon told a local sports radio show when the organization split with Calton. John Forslund, whose stint as the team's TV announcer also dated to its time in Hartford, is also no longer with the organization. The franchise stalwart, who has also worked on national broadcasts for NBC and TNT, said that when his contract with the Hurricanes expired in June 2020, Dundon gave him a take-it-or-leave-it offer. He declined to go into specifics on the financials, but said there was zero negotiation. "There obviously was no history with regard to how he viewed my position in terms of the number of years I was there or what kind of impact I had on the community or what kind of job I did for that organization," said Forslund, who is now the TV voice of the Seattle Kraken. "Obviously, that meant nothing to him." Even Brindia Moore, who Dundon points to as the most important person to the team's turnaround, hasn't been spared the owner's tough tactics. Typically, NHL teams that plan to keep their head coach in the fold negotiate an extension prior to the last season of their current contract. Brindia Moore, however, has coached the entire season on an expiring contract. He did the same in 2020 to 2021, a season in which he won the Jack Adams Award as Coach of the Year, before signing a three-year, $1.8 million extension weeks after the team's playoff run ended. Waddell acknowledged that amount was on the lower side for a coach's second contract. "There's business and there's the personal side. He separates it," Brindia Moore said. "I'm assuming with our relationship and how things have gone, I don't think this will be too much of a problem, but I also know it's a business." Dundon, however, said it's difficult to separate the personal from the professional when he comes to Brindia Moore, so much so that he's taking an uncharacteristically hands-off approach to negotiating the coach's new contract. "It's very different when you're dealing with someone you care about, and it's weird if your relationship transcends the business part of it," Dundon said. Overall, though, Dundon believes he has softened over the years in his approach to negotiations. "I realize how I've been pretty lucky, and so I don't need to win every negotiation," he said. "I just need to be happy and to feel like it's fair." Those outside the organization have had similarly challenging discussions with him. Centennial Authority Chairman Philip Isley, whose agency serves as the Hurricanes' landlord at PNC Arena, said negotiating the new lease and redevelopment deal was bumpy. The Hurricanes will continue to pay property tax on state land, something Isley said typically does not happen, and that Dundon quickly agreed to build workforce housing as part of the mixed-use development around the arena. "I told Tom I enjoy talking to him 85% of the time," Isley said. He laughed and said, "If it was 100% of the time, I'd be doing something wrong." Sold on Raleigh. Early in his ownership of the Hurricanes, Dundon had his doubts about Raleigh. The Hurricanes were bleeding money and top players didn't want to play for them. On multiple occasions, Dundon broached the subject of relocation with Waddell. In probably his first year and a half, we might have had two conversations about, "Are there other places that might be better?" Waddell said. And I kept saying, "Let's give this a chance here." Once we got to the point where we got the lease and attendance was getting better, he felt better that we can make it in this market and do well here. These days, Dundon is all in on the City of Oaks. While he still doesn't own a home in the area, he signed a 20-year lease extension that will keep the Hurricanes at PNC Arena and plans to lead an $800 million development of the surrounding area. Raleigh Mayor Marianne Baldwin called it the biggest economic development project in the history of the city. "Tom Dundon has done a fantastic job of actually getting some really good, solid information on our economic growth potential to where he's recognized that," Isley said. "To his credit, he wants to benefit from that." Perhaps the biggest testament to Dundon's faith in the market is his commitment to lead an effort to bring an MLB expansion team to the area. While MLB has yet to launch a formal expansion process, multiple reports suggest the league will be seeking a fee of around $2 billion when it decides to add franchises. Despite his success with the Hurricanes, Dundon still doesn't view buying a sports franchise as a great financial investment. "You're not outsmarting anybody by buying a team right now, and it's going to be worth way more money," Dundon said. "It would be a great investment for me because I'd enjoy it, but it wouldn't be the best use of my capital." Unlike the Hurricanes, Dundon said he most likely wouldn't own 100% of the MLB team. You can get a public-private partnership to build a great stadium, and I think the people would support it, Dundon said. The revenues would do really well here, and we could sell tickets and sponsorships to be of value to Major League Baseball. Isley, who is overseeing the development around PNC Arena for the state, said that unlike other markets, Raleigh doesn't have the sports building fatigue that comes with funding several major publicly owned professional sports facilities. It would absolutely be the cherry on top if it was located somewhere near our facility, Isley said. This really could be the next great entertainment district in the South. Charlotte, Mexico City, Montreal, Nashville, Salt Lake City, and Portland, Oregon are all likely to be on the MLB's radar when the league decides the time is right to expand, but Raleigh's reputation as a professional sports market in 2024 is stronger than it has ever been, and much of the credit for that is due to Dundon. He's doing a great job in a market that some people many years ago questioned, Bettman said, but nobody does anymore. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we're going to turn to the viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook as it's related to the cover story. The headline, Triangle's MLB Franchise Dreams Rest on One Man. And this is written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. In the past few years, the rage was for the Triangle to have a Major League Soccer team. That chatter has substantially faded. Now, one man is considering a Major League Baseball franchise in the Triangle. As you read the cover story on Tom Dundon, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, it's hard not to notice just how bullish Dundon has become about the Raleigh-Durham region. His National Hockey League franchise set attendance records during the current season and is expected to make a deep run for the Stanley Cup. Now Dundon, a billionaire who made his money in alternative finance, thinks he can assemble a team of financiers to bring an MLB franchise to the region. MLB franchises are expensive. Just last month, the Maryland Stadium Authority approved the sale of the Baltimore Orioles from the Angelos family to Baltimore native David Rubenstein, who also happens to be the former chair of the Board of Trustees at Duke University. The purchase price was $1.75 billion. Like Dundon, Rubenstein made his money in the private finance business, having led a huge private equity fund, the Carlyle Group. Dundon's intentions may be less about the community and more about the business of sports. He still stays at the Umstead Hotel and Spa when he is in town and has not moved his family from Dallas, but in Raleigh-Durham he sees an opportunity, and that opportunity is tied to scale. Dundon wants to build a stadium somewhere near the state fairgrounds and believes the corridor around the PNC Arena can be a major league sports complex with NC State University football, Hurricanes hockey, and a potential MLB team mixed with townhomes, restaurants, and bars. Dundon paid $420 million to secure the majority ownership of the Hurricanes and operating rights of the PNC Arena in 2018. At that time, the Canes were valued at $230 million, according to Forbes. Last year, the digital media site Sportico's rankings of the NHL team pegged the Canes at a market value of $980 million. Dundon believes MLB, thanks to its fat TV contract, may have a far better return on investment than hockey. Sportico notes that the average value of an MLB franchise was about $2.2 billion in 2021. But two significant things have to be mitigated before Dundon's plan even has a chance of making it to the MLB owners' boardrooms. One, MLB plays 162 games in the regular season, 81 home games. Even a new 30,000-capacity baseball stadium, Tampa Bay Rays currently has the smallest MLB stadium with a capacity of 25,000, means there will be 2.4 million available seats on a given season, almost the same as the total population of the region. That math does not work. At a 50% capacity would mean every other person living in the Triangle must have gone to at least one game. Two, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred has said he wants to implement the MLB expansion before he retires in 2029. But competition is fierce, coming from similar or larger metros such as Austin, Texas, Nashville, Tennessee, and Charlotte. With his financial contacts, Dundon can raise $2 billion or $2.5 billion for the franchise. It's highly doubtful there will be any local players who would play a significant role beyond just a small minority stake. But MLB has to be convinced that Raleigh-Durham's growth will continue to be as robust as it has been for the past couple of decades. Dundon is convinced the plan would work and has the Canes to show for it. And now we turn to biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Looking for places to play. An idea that was ahead of its time in 1974, Grow Soccer in the Raleigh area, has boomed into an organization that serves thousands and spends millions. Raleigh kids focused on football, basketball, and baseball before the Capital Area Soccer League became a cultural juggernaut. The effort got a boost in 1981 when Capital Broadcasting Company funded 14 fields for the WRAL soccer park. That expanded to 21 fields in 1987. CBC helped finance the project and then forgave the remaining $300,000 in debt. This whole thing is about getting good fields. Where can we play? That's the big issue, CBC chairman Jim Goodman says. He notes that his three children all played in Castle, CASL, and adds, "I just have always liked soccer." The organization now has 16,800 players, one of the largest in the nation, and a budget of $18 million while playing on 180 fields. CEO Gary Butte says a big part of his mission is making sure there are enough fields to handle the growth as the market is changing. The WRAL soccer park is in Northeast Raleigh, but the real surge in population is in the country's southwest region. The county's southwest region, and addressing that is a key goal. The organization is still officially the Capital Area Soccer League, but the 501c3 does business as North Carolina FC Youth as part of a deal with the North Carolina FC. That deal has created a pyramid in which NCFC Youth looks to provide a fun entry to the sport for recreational players and then more challenging rungs as players move up. Butte says the WRAL soccer park has been instrumental in the league's success, but finding fields will always be a challenge in a booming market where the demand for land is intense. "Our focus is bringing the game to where people live," Butte says. "What we do is we work with all the municipalities, the towns, the school systems, and private facilities to create relationships and partnerships. The key to that is early," Goodman says. "If we could use this field 5 years from now, let's tie it up." Hockey town Charlotte, checkers move up. The Carolina Hurricanes are the talk of the Triangle now, but Charlotte is seeing success when it comes to hockey as well. In fact, the Charlotte Checkers averaged 6,979 fans per game this season, its best number since 7,188 per game in 1996-97. It helped that the Checkers played their first outdoor game in January and drew a sellout crowd of 11,031. The Checkers play at 8,300-seat Bojangles Coliseum. Checkers officials told the Charlotte Business Journal that after the playoffs, revenue could jump to as much as $8 million this season, well above the $5 million to $6 million last season. EdTech firm grows in Mooresville. An educational technology company is expanding its office space, making it the sole tenant in a Mooresville office building. California's IXL Learning has leased an additional 22,309 square feet in Perimeter Park. It now fully occupies 1,600 Perimeter, a 90,089 square foot building. This is the first time the company has expanded since making the space in Perimeter Park its East Coast headquarters in 2016. The last time it expanded was in February 2023 when it added 22,544 square feet of space. William Allen, managing partner, and Alex Dunn, director of office leasing at Trinity Partners, represented the landlord. Mapletree, under Mapletree U.S. Income Commercial Trust, Andrew Pesemer of Coldwell Banker, Commercial West Bay Real Estate, and Brian Farmer of Lee & Associates represented IXL Learning. NC scores with remote workers. In 2022, North Carolina emerged as one of the top destinations for relocating remote workers, With an influx of some 345,000 new residents, according to Yardi, a real estate software company. Among the new residents moving in, the Tar Heel State attracted 135,000 on-site workers and 47,000 remote workers, enough to rank the state third in the nation, only behind Florida, 107,000, and Texas, 95,000, the study notes. Yardi authors add the demographic shift is positioning North Carolina as a vibrant hub for business and innovation and making it one of the top destinations for millennials, Gen Xers, and boomers. New hospital opens in Chapel Hill. UNC Health will soon begin treating patients at a new surgical hospital on its Chapel Hill campus. The health system in 2019 began construction on the 375,000-square-foot facility. UNC Health plans to begin treating patients at the new NC Surgical Hospital in July. The facility will support advanced surgical care and services for patients throughout the state. The seven-story building includes 80 patient rooms and 26 operating rooms. The facility marks the single largest addition to the health system's Chapel Hill campus since it was built in 1952. With this new hospital, we are gaining capacity and will be able to accept more patients and enhance access to the surgical care that the people of North Carolina need, says Janet Hadar, president of UNC Hospitals. The hospital will employ about 500 workers, which include more than 100 new jobs. And finally, Wake leads for migration patterns. As the Raleigh Metro continues to attract residents at a blistering pace, new numbers show just how fast the growth is compared to other metro areas around the state. Wake County saw a net migration of nearly 35 people per day between July 1, 2022 and July 1, 2023, according to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, the most of any county in North Carolina. The rate comes to more than 12,700 for the year. But that rate is down slightly from 2022 and well below the 16,000 figure for 2021. Statewide, North Carolina saw a net migration of 347 people per day. That was the third highest rate in the country behind Florida, 1,021 per day, and Texas, 864 per day. Mecklenburg saw the second highest growth rate among North Carolina counties at nearly 32 people per day. Wake County's estimated population of 1.19 million in 2023 was above Mecklenburg's estimated 1.16 million. And now we turn to some of the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one's written by Kaylee Thompson. Dilwig pivots in Cary due to skyrocketing vacancy rates. A commercial real estate firm in Durham is looking to shift into a new industry, apartments. Dilwig, which owns and develops office, flex space, and self-storage projects, has filed a rezoning with the town of Cary to allow for multifamily use instead of office. The company is looking to build up to 245 residential developments instead of its original plan for a four-story office building along Regency Parkway. Details of the multifamily project are unclear as Dilwig did not return requests for comment. The rezoning application says that vacancy rates in the Regency Park office park are at all-time highs and increasing by the day, and that Regency Park is dying. Two office buildings within Regency Park, 9,000 and 11,000 Regency Parkway, were given back to the lender by Dilwig in November 2022. The vacancy rates for those buildings were 95 and 40% in fourth quarter 2023, slightly higher than what they were at the time of release. The office vacancy rate in Cary for the same period was 15.3%. The Class A office vacancy rate in the Triangle increased to 15.6% in the first quarter compared to 14.5% the quarter prior, according to Triangle Business Journal's Space publication. The multifamily proposal is a pivot from what Dilwig had originally planned for the vacant 10 acres at 12,010 Regency Parkway. Dilwig planned an office development in early 2018 after the company had acquired the land for $1.4 million in 2017. Its current assessed value was about $2.8 million. The office development was named Regency Terrace and would have had an 83,400-square-foot office building with a standalone parking deck. The plans included a 5,000-square-foot rooftop deck, lounge, fitness center, conference center, and weekly food trucks. Dilwig is seeking the rezoning in order to offer living options for the employees of nearby companies and help address the growing need for housing in Cary, according to the rezoning application. The rezoning would remain planned development district, but would amend it to allow for a multifamily. Conditions attached to the rezoning amendment cap the residential units at 245. Innovation effort nabs $25 million in private funding. The infusion from notable investors will boost research efforts. This story is written by Zach Ezone. NC Innovation says it has secured $25 million in private commitments from some of North Carolina's largest companies, a key milestone for the new organization with a mission to help turn university research into viable commercial ventures. The private contributions come from a range of companies and organizations, including companies like SAS and Martin Marietta, and financial institutions like Pinnacle Financial Partners and Truist, whose former CEO, Kelly King, is chair of the NC Innovation Board of Directors. NC Innovation is focused on advancing university research into commercial opportunities through a grant process that targets the area of development where funding is often lacking. Although the organization has been around for a few years, it gained momentum last year when state lawmakers earmarked $500 million in state funding for NC Innovation. State law outlines multiple requirements that NC Innovation must accomplish prior to obtaining the funding, split into two tranches, with the second tranche including a requirement for private funding contributions. NC Innovation declined to provide a complete list of the companies and organizations that have pledged funding and how much, but according to the organization's website, its backers include JP Morgan Chase, Ally Financial, First Citizens Bank, Bank of America, and others. Wells Fargo, some of the most impactful companies in North Carolina and the United States, have put funding behind NC Innovation's mission, and I'm deeply grateful for their support, King said in a statement. That Wells Fargo may have been a misprint or a typo there. Together with the NC Innovation Endowment established by the legislature, this public-private partnership will provide the support North Carolina Public University researchers need to further develop groundbreaking discoveries, King said. These private commitments include a blend of cash and pledges that will be paid over time, according to NC Innovation CEO Bennett Waters. According to state law, the organization is required to receive the $25 million within 4 years of receiving the endowment funding. Obtaining the financial commitments is an important milestone as it represents a continued validation and endorsement of NC Innovation's work, Waters says. These are some of the largest companies in North Carolina and a significant number of financial institutions, Waters says. It speaks to the business credibility of the model and the innovative use of an endowment to create interest and investment income to fund the programs themselves in perpetuity. This private funding supports the organization's administration and overhead so that it can direct all the endowment interest and income to its programs, Waters says. NC Innovation operates a grant program that directs funding to projects in a stage of the research and development process where funding is often difficult to reach. It is the space where technologies may have shown promise but are not yet ready for the private market. The state funding is directed to NC Innovation in two tranches of $250 million, one each in fiscal years 2023 to 24 and 2024 to 25, dependent on the group meeting certain requirements. The organization in January received the first tranche of state funding after certifying in December that it had completed all necessary legislative requirements. The funding is directed to an endowment that creates interest and income that NC Innovation uses for its grant programs. The organization is in the process of selecting an independent third-party investment manager to oversee the endowment as required by state law. NC Innovation recently launched its pilot grant program, which it will use to test its processes before scaling the effort and initiating a statewide request for proposals later this year. Waters says the organization in May will present a slate of about 6 to 8 projects to its board of directors that will ultimately decide which ones, if any, should receive funding. The organization so far completed 2 of the 5 requirements necessary to receive the second tranche of state funding. The group last year established a network of regional innovation hubs anchored at 4 universities. universities, East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro, UNC Charlotte, and Western Carolina University in Cullowhee. NC Innovation is in the process of completing a statewide technology development strategy, which includes a survey of exiting patients, research capabilities, and potential market opportunities within each of its regional hubs. Waters says the organization plans to publish this report in late second quarter. The group is also required to send the Joint Legislative Commission on Governmental Operations detailed spending and performance management plans for any program funds awarded. This will take place after the pilot programs are selected during the May board meeting. NC Innovation would complete its other statutory requirement after the meeting, which involves sending a report to the Joint Legislative Commission on Governmental Operations for an update on its program. The organization sent its first update after securing the private financial contributions. After completing these requirements, NC Innovation would be in line to receive its second tranche of state funding when the next fiscal year begins, July 1st, Waters says. And our last top news story, developer buys Joco land linked to 335 homes, Hopper Communities buys Clayton property for subdivision. And this is written by Ben Tobin. A Charlotte developer has taken another step toward building a housing community in Johnston County that caused contentious debate among residents. An LLC tied to Hopper Communities purchased a little more than 146 acres in the town of Clayton off Vincent Road for $4.1 million in April, according to Johnston County deed records. The land will be used for a subdivision that will include 335 single-family homes. Representatives of Hopper Communities did not respond to requests seeking comment on the land purchase and the next steps for the subdivision project. This purchase follows a long process of getting rezoning approval from the town of Clayton. Originally, Hopper Communities proposed for the neighborhood to have a mix of 457 single-family homes and townhomes, but after town council members raised concerns about the density of the project in relation to less dense surrounding neighborhoods, the developer scrapped the townhome component. The Clayton Town Council gave the green light for the rezoning in March. Bill Harrell, Raleigh development partner with Hopper Communities, told Triangle Business Journal at the time via email that all of our hard work, planning, up to the last minute negotiating right before the meeting with the town and perseverance has finally led to a successful rezoning. After almost a two-year rezoning, we're finally able to move into the next phase of the process with the site plan approval, construction drawings, and permitting, Harrell said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on aviation and banking. Copa Airlines CEO sees more RDU flights. Airline out of Panama will start offering trips to Panama City. As Copa Airlines prepares for its debut at Raleigh-Durham International Airport with a new route to Panama City, Panama, its top executive was in the Triangle recently trying to build interest in the flight among local business leaders. CEO Pedro Hellebron spoke at a forum April 19 sponsored by the Regional Transportation Business Coalition. He touched on his carrier's connectivity and said the RDU opportunity wasn't on Copa's radar until the airport's recruiters reached out. The flight starts June 21 and will run 4 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. But that's just the start as Copa builds up its fleet. If this market continues growing the way we think it's going to grow, I'm sure we'll see growth from Copa very shortly, Hellebron said. He said the plan is to grow our frequencies as the market develops. While Copa's investments would be additional flights to its hub in Panama, he told the crowd he would not be surprised to see other airlines flock to the opportunity, creating new destinations at RDU. Raleigh-Durham Airport Airline Authority CEO Michael Landguth said the new flight has been a long time coming, as 275 passengers were traveling between RDU and Central and South America daily pre-pandemic, even without a nonstop flight. We really felt we needed to connect to this region, he said. Emails were sent, phone calls were made, and they kept at it. They've been on our tail since pre-pandemic, Hellebron said. RDU was not on our map. Well, now I can say it's an amazing place. Copa announced plans for the flight in February, and the bet appears to be paying off, as Hellebron said bookings are trending ahead right now compared to other cities it flies to in the southeast. Lufthansa adds support space at RDU. as Lufthansa prepares to launch Raleigh-Durham International Airport's first nonstop flight to Germany. It's leasing property to support the new triangle operation. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority approved a lease, its South Cargo Building 1 to Lufthansa this month. The airline plans to use the building to support its aircraft maintenance operation, storing parts and tools. First-year fixed rent revenue of more than $32,000 is expected. Fixed rental rates would increase by 3% a year unless RDU decides to perform another appraisal. Overall, Lufthansa plans to invest $175 million to start its RDU Frankfurt service. The plan is to fly the route 5 times a week starting June 6th. RDU pumps in more dollars to hype routes. As Raleigh-Durham International Airport works to secure new flights, the staff is working to promote what's coming through aggressive marketing campaigns. Part of it is tied to the marketing incentives the airport pledges to airlines in order to lure air service. The airport's air service development policy, including its air service incentive program, provides the funds. Airlines say these incentives are standard in the industry. The latest budget provides $1 million for promoting air service, parking, and concessions collectively. But staff says it's not enough, so the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority Board voted April 18 to add $250,000 to the promotional pot. And finally, Triangle Banks weigh interest rate impact. Higher for longer. It's the scenario local banks are gearing up for, as borrowing could be more costlier for businesses. Local bankers were disappointed to hear Federal Reserve Chair Jay Powell say that it's likely to take longer than expected for inflation to hit the central bank's long-stated goal of 2%, a factor that could delay the rate cuts. But for now, they're forging ahead. I do think banks are well positioned now to maintain rates at this level, says Ted Whitehurst, CEO of Providence Bank in Rocky Mount. We still feel like we're at a peak of interest rates, so we don't think we'll see the additional pressure of rates going up. Ron Day, CEO of First Carolina Bank, says, generally speaking, banks are more liability sensitive when it comes to interest rate movements. We are no exception to that, and we'll be happy to see rates come down moderately. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and higher ed. UNC Duke battle for more hospital beds. UNC Health is expanding its pitch for a new hospital in RTP. State planning documents call for additional hospital beds in Durham County as the region grows. And Duke Health and UNC Health are both vying for the right to expand their services. The 2024 State Medical Facilities Plan identifies a need for 38 more hospital beds in a service area that includes Durham, Caswell, and Warren counties. Healthcare providers were required to file a Certificate of Need, or CON, application with the state regulators to obtain a license to develop the beds by April 15. UNC Health is proposing adding beds to a future hospital in Research Triangle Park. The NC Department of Health and Human Services in September 2021 approved UNC Health's proposal to build a $252 million hospital in the heart of RTP. The health system's plans called for a 40-bed facility near the intersection of Highways 54 and 147 across from the Frontier RTP campus. A year later, NCDHHS approved a second application from UNC Health that would add another 34 beds to the future facility, giving the health system the authority to develop a new hospital with 74 acute care beds at an estimated cost of $279.3 million. UNC Health is now looking to expand the project even further. The health system's new application would give the hospital 112 acute care beds and raise the total projected capital expenditure to $371.3 million, according to a project application. Meanwhile, Duke Health, which saw its proposals in 2021 and 2022 get denied in favor of UNC Health's plans, has put forth its own bid. The system wants to add 38 beds to Duke University Hospital, which would give the facility a total of no more than 1,100 acute care beds. The proposal has a projected capital expenditure of $4.8 million. These recent proposals come as UNC Health's plans for its RTP hospital remain held up in an appeals process. Duke Health filed appeals contesting state regulators' decisions to award the hospital beds to UNC Health in 2021 and 2022. Both appeals went to the North Carolina Office of Administrative Hearings and have since reached the NC Court of Appeals, which has not ruled on the case. Applications seek new MRI scanner. Healthcare providers have submitted competing proposals for the right to host a new magnetic resonance imaging scanner in Johnston County. The multi-million dollar proposals come from Raleigh Radiology and Johnston Imaging LLC, which is a subsidiary of UNC Health Johnston, part of the larger UNC Health system. In its application, UNC Health proposes acquiring and operating one fixed MRI scanner at Johnston Medical Mall. This is a large medical office building with outpatient services and physician practices directly across from the health system's Smithfield campus. And finally, Eli Lilly unit ends deal with Durham Biotech. A subsidiary of Eli Lilly and Company has ended its multi-million dollar collaboration with the Durham Gene Editing Company. Precision Biosciences and Eli Lilly in 2020 decided to collaborate on developing multiple therapies for various genetic disorders. The agreement was potentially worth up to $2.7 billion, but the companies have ended the partnership well short of that. The deal revolved around Precision's gene editing platform, Arcus, to develop therapies Eli Lilly could then commercialize. Precision received $135 million up front, including $100 million in cash and $35 million from Eli Lilly's purchase of Precision shares. The companies in June 2023 amended the deal. The companies advanced three programs from concepts to candidates nearly ready for clinical trials, but Eli Lilly's Prevail Therapeutics decided to end the deal instead. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page on Greater Triangle Growth. Amazon opens 1,000-job facility, Seattle company announced project 3 years ago. 3 years after it was announced, a huge Amazon facility in Johnston County is up and running, and the e-commerce giant says we'll create more than 1,000 jobs. Amazon quietly opened a 620,000-square-foot import processing facility in the West Smithfield Industrial Park in Smithfield in late February, according to spokesman Greg Rios. The facility, commonly referred to as a cross-dock, is at 2150 U.S. Highway 70 Business. The facility, announced in May 2021 as part of a $100 million investment, is different from the typical Amazon fulfillment center. Whereas fulfillment centers pick, pack, and ship customers' orders, a cross-dock serves as an entry point into Amazon's fulfillment network. Manufacturers can drop off their product at the cross-dock, and from there, it begins its path inside the Amazon supply chain to fulfillment centers across the region before ultimately reaching the customer's front door. Rio says that employees can earn competitive wages starting at $17 per hour, but did not share how many people have been hired at the facility. Local leaders are buzzing at the job creation and economic activity brought by the new plant. Unlike its fellow Johnston County town to the west, Clayton, Smithfield's growth has been much slower in recent years. The town's population sat at just above 12,000 in 2022, per estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau, which represents growth of only about 1,000 people over the course of 12 years. But things are changing. Mayor Andy Moore says that developer interest in Smithfield is at an all-time high right now. 2,000 homes being in with 2,000 homes being in various stages of planning and construction, and various commercial and industrial projects are being pitched. And obviously, Amazon plays a role with that, he says. Cary investor pays $5 million for preschool. A private preschool in an upscale community in Chatham County has sold to a Cary investor for millions of dollars. LLC Next Idea, which is tied to Gaurav Sharma, purchased the Primrose School of Chapel Hill at Briar Chapel at 81 Falling Springs Drive for $5 million, according to Chatham County deed records filed April 15. The school sits on a nearly two-acre parcel. The seller, Mart Enterprises of Pittsburgh, purchased the land in 2015 for a little under $600,000. The property is at the entrance to the Briar Chapel community off Highway 501 south of Chapel Hill. Sharma did not return a call seeking comment. According to its website, Primrose Schools, headquartered in Georgia, is a national system of accredited private preschools that provides a premier early education and child care experience. And finally, we turn to Kaylee Thompson's page on real estate. Plans for tower at Char Grill stall out. Raleigh firm sought to put 20-story tower at Hillsborough Street site. Plans for a 20-story tower in a growing corridor of downtown Raleigh have hit a wall. Developer Wilson Blunt last year received rezoning approval for 7 parcels along Hillsborough Street in Glenwood South, including the original Chargrill location and the historic Elmwood House. But the company now confirms its plans for new buildings are on hold. The Raleigh firm was under contract to buy the land in 2022, but has since withdrawn from the agreement. No site plans for the development have been submitted to the city of Raleigh. Sources close to Chargrill said that as far as they knew, the development was dead in the water and isn't happening. And we'll stop there, as the rest of the article basically mentions that the Elmwood House now has an advertisement on their door for office space available for lease. Raleigh overwhelmingly approves expanding downtown tax district. Downtown Raleigh just got a whole lot bigger, technically. The Raleigh City Council has approved expanding a special tax district to cover more of the downtown area, a request that was made by the Downtown Raleigh Alliance, which is funded by the tax and works to promote the downtown area and attract business. The council voted 6-1 with Christina Jones opposed. Council member Corey Branch was absent, but shared a statement that he was in support of the expansion. During the meeting, various business owners and organizations spoke in favor of the expansion, though most of the business owners that spoke were already within the current municipal service district. They praised the work done by the Downtown Raleigh Alliance. Within the motion that passed, the expansion excludes all residences west of Boylan Street, south of Hillsborough Street, and south of Western Boulevard. The council will also review any property owners' petitions, which have to be submitted by April 23, to be excluded from the downtown MSD expansion. The council still has to vote on which fiscal year the downtown MSD expansion will go into effect. If the council wants it to go into effect for fiscal year 2025, it must be voted on by June 4. And finally, Chapel Hill firm to build in Hillsborough. A large mixed-use development is planned in Hillsborough in the latest example of the Triangle's growth spreading outward. Chapel Hill developer Capcoff Ventures submitted a master plan for a 99-acre mixed-use development near Waterstone South. It will have 205 townhomes, 450 apartments, 40,000 square feet of neighborhood commercial space, and 200,000 square feet of medical office space. Waterstone South is adjacent to the UNC Hospital's Hillsborough campus, the primary reason developer Eric Shupp says they chose the location. With its proximity to the hospital, the developer is looking to attract symbiotic uses to the hospital, such as specialty practices, lab services, and orthopedics. And we'll wrap up with the Business Pulse survey. The question, are you dining out less due to higher prices at restaurants? 203 responses, 55% say yes, 24% say no, 14% say I'm doing more cooking at home, and 7% said I visit my favorite spot. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.